This is your day to shine. For God and for love and for good and others, no matter what you are going through, no matter what your problem. So I ask at the start of this session, how do you wake up in the morning? I don't mean, what's your routine? I don't even mean, are you a morning person or a night person? I mean, what is my, I have to work on this. And your orientation towards the day, towards life this day, towards the tasks that lie before me, towards the people that I will meet, for the things that I might be able to contribute. Do I embrace them? Do I dread them? How do I invite God into this? Because very often, how I start the day is how I live the day. It may be, if you have had a deep grief, a deep loss, maybe you're going through that right now, you will experience what is sometimes called mourning re-realization. When something very traumatic happens, often at first, we don't integrate it yet, so I wake up that next morning, and at first I don't remember it. I might have a vague sense that there's a problem, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, I will never see her again. What this person is going through is wrenching. Because it takes a little while for our synapses to get rewired. And then eventually they do. There is another kind of mourning re-realization that is not of grief that I will get to, that I want to have when I face the day. Before I get there, I'm going to do a little hope assessment with you. There's a researcher by the name of Rick Snyder, and he has developed the primary scale of hope. Interesting, in his chapter on measuring hope, in his book, The Psychology of Hope, he quotes from the Apostle Peter, always be ready to give an answer for the hope that lies within you. Hope does that. So here are a few questions. You can answer them on a scale of 1 to 4. 1 would be definitely false, not true of me. Number 4 would be definitely true of me. Quick assessment of your own hope quotient today. Number 1, I energetically pursue my goals. 1 through 4. Number 2, I can think of many ways to get out of a jam. Number 3, my past experiences have prepared me well for my future. Number 4, there are lots of ways around any problem. Number 5, scale of 1 through 4, I've been pretty successful in life. Number 6, I can think of many ways to get the things in life that are most important to me. Number 7, I meet the goals that I set for myself. And number 8, even when others get discouraged, I know I can find a way to solve the problem. And Snyder and his team have now used that with well over 10,000 people. Some of the items might surprise you, but those turn out to be the items that are best able to predict, is someone going to be living today with hope, which means persistence and endurance, or despair. So that helps me know where my hope is, but where do I find hope? Where does it come from? And for that, I want to turn to the Apostle Paul. We're walking through his words to the church at Philippi, and these words about hope. And I'm not talking now about hope for this outcome or that outcome. Very often, that's how people think about it. Well, I get the job I want, or the relationship I want, or the report from the doctor that I want, or the behavior from my kids that I want. No, 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 no. This is underneath all of that. Paul has been talking to the Philippians about how, in spite of his problems, God's work keeps going forward, and he keeps going forward together with Jesus, and so he rejoices. Verse 18, yes, and I will continue to rejoice. And I don't know about you, but I'm just kind of claiming that phrase. For I know that through your prayers, by the way, I thank God for your prayers, and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, which I'm also very thankful for, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance, or it could be translated salvation. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, Now, the word that's translated eagerly expect here, Paul very likely made up. It's only used a couple of times in the New Testament just by him. And it's a picture from a runner. It's got three words together, head and then stretched. And then that little word apo, from, like a racer who is on the track with his head stretched forward, striving towards the finish line, not looking behind him, not looking around him at anything would distract. Just one thing, I'm headed for this. I'm looking forward to this. Every cell in my being is moving towards this. That's how Paul wakes up in the morning, like a runner racing towards the goal line. And he's filled with hope. I eagerly expect and hope. I'd like to wake up in the morning in that way, that I will in no way be put ashamed. That's kind of a low bar, isn't it? How much shame did you have today? Not much. That was a good day. They lived in a hope and shame culture where shame was an indication of a misspent, meaningless, worthless life. Paul says, nope, not me. Whatever hardships I face, it won't be that. I eagerly expect and hope that I will have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. I think I might be tempted to hope that I don't die. Not Paul. We just need to consider this. Hope is the doorway to life, a good friend of mine said. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Now there is hope beyond health. Think about friends of mine right now who are facing that situation, and you just need to hear this very smart man who knew Jesus really well said, to live is Christ, and to die is not tragic, is not the end, is not the worst. He actually says it's gain. If I'm to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I do not know. I'm torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. But it's more necessary for you that I remain in the body. Convinced of this, I know I will remain, and I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith. So that through my being with you, again, your boasting in Christ Jesus will abound on account of me. How striking it is that for the Apostle Paul, his facing death, being in prison, knowing that that's in his future, did not rob his life of meaning. It filled his life with meaning. I'll tell you a little story, reading a fascinating book. It's called Existential Psychotherapy, written about 50 years or so ago by Irvin Yalom, who is, as I say this, I think now 94 years old and still teaching. He's a psychiatrist at Stanford, unbelievably brilliant guy, and deals with basic issues of life, existential psychology. It's fascinating. He said that his interest there was kindled by a patient of his named Jane, who showed up deeply depressed, pervasive sense of helplessness, purposelessness. In therapy group, Jane was timid and boring. Her every statement was predictable. Before speaking, she scanned the sea of faces in the group for clues about what others wanted, and then shaped her statements to please as many people as possible. Anything to avoid offense, to avoid driving others away. What happened, of course, was that she drove people away, not from anger, but from boredom. A lifeless person. And I know what it's like to scan faces to try to please and impress and not offend. It was clear that Jane was in chronic retreat from life. Everyone in the group tried to find the real Jane within the cocoon of compliance. What a poignant phrase, the cocoon of compliance. And when we live there, there is no life. There is no God. There is no hope in the cocoon of compliance that she had spun around herself. They tried to encourage Jane. They urged her to socialize, to study, to write the last paper she needed for graduation, to buy clothes, to pay her bills, to groom herself, to comb her hair, to prepare a resume, to apply for jobs. This exhortation, like most exhortation in therapy, was not successful. Interestingly, the turning point for Jane came, and this is part of what prompted Yalom's interest in existential psychology, when she found a growth. There was a large, ominous auxiliary lymph node and it was potentially fatal. It turned out not to be, but ironically, or paradoxically, or divinely, the prospect of death ended up being her wake-up call to the gift of life. And this is what Yellen goes on to say. Death and life are interdependent through the physicality of death. Though the physicality of death destroys us, the idea of death saves us. Recognition of death contributes a sense of poignancy to life, provides a radical shift of life perspective, and can transport one from a mode of living characterized by diversions, tranquilization, and petty anxieties to a more authentic mode. And Paul goes one step deeper. I have looked death square in the eye. I realize that it will come. I understand all about it. I have experienced it in my own being, in my own body, in my spiritual life, and I know the one who has overcome it. I know the hope that lies beyond it, ultimate hope, foundational hope, for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. I was talking about the morning re-realization and thinking about for the disciples, how they must have experienced that after the crucifixion, when they woke up on Saturday morning and had that ominous vague, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, he's gone, Jesus is gone. But then there was another re-realization, morning re-realization, and that happened on Monday morning after Easter. Oh yeah, he's alive. He's alive. To live is Christ, to die is gain. I eagerly expect and hope not to be put to shame, but have sufficient courage. Not for this outcome, not for that outcome. I want him so bad. I want things with my family. I want things in my life. I want people that I love. I want. But way deeper than all of that is this. Christ. He was right. He is here. He knew. He forgives. He guides. I live with him and for him. This is your day to shine.
Hey, I'm Tim. Thanks for being here. We've got two questions for you after today's episode. The first question that came to mind for me was, do you have a morning mantra, a phrase that you wake up with on your lips? I think after watching that episode, mine, at least for the next few days, is going to be, to live is Christ, to die is gain. I want to live with Jesus and for Jesus. I just loved that episode. I loved what John shared. So what's your morning mantra? Maybe that would be helpful for you as you're thinking about being a hopeful person, being filled with hope. The second question I have is, do you have anyone praying for you in your life regularly? My grandparents, when they were living, I was told, prayed for us grandkids every morning, and I think it really made a big difference in our lives. And I've thought, as I'm getting older, it's my turn now. It's my turn to do that for the people in my life that I love, my family, my kids. And guess what? That includes you too. There's actually a group of us that meet daily to pray for you, for viewers and listeners that send in prayer requests. So if you've got something going on in your life, or you are listening today thinking, man, I need more hope, let us know. We would love to pray for you. You can find our contact in the show notes. I hope that you will let us pray alongside you. Love you. Have a great day.